This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to
Should I Stay or Should I Go Now? Should I stay or should I go now?
We will continue to keep you up to date on the Gophers. 3:52 left in Des Moines. Gophers leading 74-64 over Louisville. H. Lake, who joined us at halftime, right when we came on the air, he'll join us again at 2:03, and we'll kind of recap what is taking place. We're going to jump into politics right now. It has been a few weeks since we last had a chance to chat with freshman Congressman Dean Phillips, and he's kind enough to join us. Dean, always a pleasure. Thank you so much, sir. Give me your overview on your town hall meeting, how it went, because a lot of times when people are running, they call for town halls, but then sometimes as polarized as we are right now, and whether it's a Democrat or Republican, it can become a bit of a shout fest, and it's not really an exchange of ideas. How did you feel like yesterday went?
Well, first, good afternoon, Chad. Good to be with you.
Same to you, sir.
First and foremost, I love town halls. I think it's a responsibility and actually one of the joys of serving in Congress. It is the primary mechanism by which I hear from constituents. In fact, it's in an increasingly digital era. It's actually kind of refreshing to have some good old analog face-to-face questions. And last night was great. We had well over 200 people in the room. I had questions from Democrats, Libertarians, Republicans, across the range of subjects. And I loved every minute of it. Some tough questions, a lot of provocative questions. And my takeaway is more homework to do to study issues that people bring up. And my promise is always to reflect on it and get back to people and do my best to advocate.
The Star Tribune story, sir, reflected a fair amount on gun control.
Yeah.
We now have this, you know, a week ago, this unspeakable tragedy in New Zealand, 50-some killed, and it was solely because of hate. It was solely because these individuals, decent people, Muslims, not the right color for this demonic individual, and New Zealand has reacted quickly with a dramatic change regarding guns. When you see that, and obviously New Zealand has a different government system than we do, they do not have a constitutional protection to bear arms. But when you see how another country, which bears some similarities to the United States, and how they reacted to an atrocity like this, how do you reflect on how America has reacted to similar atrocities?
Well, as you know, Chad, one of the reasons I ran for Congress is I'm tired of thoughts and tweets, and I want to see action, not just on gun violence, but across the spectrum. And you know, even last night at the town hall, there were a couple questions about gun violence. I remind people all the time, if you want to have a thoughtful, impactful conversation about that subject, open it by asking about how we reduce gun violence. Don't open it by asking about gun control, because that's how you end conversations with people. I happen to be a gun owner myself. I respect the Second Amendment. And you're right, there's a difference between New Zealand that doesn't have that constitutional protection. But we're America, and we're innovative, and we're thoughtful, and we're smart. And it is, in my estimation, it's time that we identify the outcome that we want, which is reduction of gun violence, and then solicit ideas from all across the political spectrum. I do believe we should study the issue, let data drive decisions. And last night, a young man asked a question. He's an AR-15 owner, doesn't want his gun taken away. And I turned the question on him, you know, what should we do? And I learned some things from him. And I think we have to start asking for ideas rather than imposing them on one another. And this is an issue that doesn't know party or that kind of perspective. It touches everybody in every community. And I'm just tired of inactivity. So I'm glad that this Congress, for the first time in almost two decades, took some action. And we passed a universal background check bill It is not the end-all, be-all, but it's the beginning. And it was something that over 80% of Americans agreed with. So if we start with a conclusion and the desirable outcome, we work our way backwards with tactics, we can do a whole lot better, and that's why I'm trying to do so myself.
Houses forever, Senates forever will pass bills, and that's what they should do. And at times you can pass a bill and you can be pessimistic because of the control of the other body or who controls the presidency. Is this a bill, though, that has any chance passing the Senate or getting the signature of the president?
Well, you know, the truth is, Chad, probably unlikely. And that's troublesome to me. I don't care. This is, again, it's not about parties. It's about the principle. And I think the principle of legislation should be that members of both the House and the Senate should at least have the opportunity to vote on these issues, regardless of what the party in power thinks of it. In fact, the House, as you might know, Chad, we made some significant rules changes for the 116th Congress, including one that if a bill gets 290 co-sponsors, which is two-thirds of the House, it has to be heard on the House floor, has to be voted on, regardless of who's in power, regardless who's the speaker. Those are subtle rules changes, but I think those are ones that should be included also in the Senate so that senators can vote on these bills. It's true for H.R. 1, which is our campaign finance bill, an ethics and voter protection bill we just passed. It's probably dead in the Senate unless Mitch McConnell changes his mind. But I think it's fair to voters that their representatives take a vote rather than use procedural tactics to reduce the likelihood of doing so. And I'm on a mission to increase transparency, ensure that the wheels of democracy are better lubricated, and recognize that we have a system designed to make change really difficult, and it works really well.
One more question on this, and I want to get to many other topics. Congressman Dean Phillips, excuse me, kind enough to join us, 16 past 1. I'm getting the text already when folks will say the increase in laws will just punish everyday citizens who are obeying the laws, and those individuals who are inclined to threaten or to incite violence or to be a part of violence will not be affected. And I'm also getting texts on mental health. Do you think we would be better off to try to get both sides to this, including the president, to include a combination bill that somehow reinforces bills that we have, deals with mental health, funding more money to it, to try to appeal to more sides and to get something absolutely passed?
The answer is absolutely yes. And mental health, by the way, Chad, transcends gun violence.
Oh, certainly. Yep.
And it's a great starting point. In fact, I've only been a member of Congress for 2 months. I've made it a point to create relationships with my Republican colleagues, especially freshmen. And a lot of our early conversations relative to how we can collaborate have centered around mental health because it touches everybody, every community, my own family, I'm sure yours and listeners as well. And that's a perfect example of an issue we can all agree on and now work our way backwards with ways to make investments in it. And yes, it will reduce gun violence, I believe, in America. Yes, it will create stronger, more vibrant communities that when we provide access to mental health to kids in schools. Yes, it will decrease violence in many forms. And I believe it's incumbent on all of us to start advocating for it. So this is not just about gun violence. This is about, and I would start in schools. I think every school in this country should ensure that competent, professional mental health counselors are on staff looking after our children at an age where it makes a huge difference. And that is the America that I want to live in, and I think we can do better. And that will have it'll bear fruit. And we also, Chad, have to look at that as an investment. It is not a cost because it will save us lives and it will save us money down the road.
I want to get to a Washington Post story from a couple days ago, which featured you. Let me read a couple graphs for the audience, which is not familiar with it. It was supposed to be a chance for Muslim and Jewish House Democrats to ease tensions and find common ground. At a late night meeting blocks from the Capitol, about a dozen lawmakers shared their raw experiences with bigotry and discrimination, hoping the stories would bridge the glaring interfaith divide. Suddenly, Representative Dean Phillips, who we're talking to right now, a Jewish Democrat, shattered a moment meant to be about listening and learning, not politics. Phillips said he had to address what has been unspoken for nearly 2 hours, the recent divisive remarks of Representative Ilhan Omar, who suggested American supporters of Israel have an allegiance to a foreign country. Those kind of remarks, Phillips said, represented the tips of arrow, small but devastating offenses that made Jews fearful of a rising tide of anti-Semitism. Phillips told his fellow Minnesota freshman that she had to apologize and said the group should publicly affirm Israel's right to exist and protect itself. One last graph here. His words stunned three Muslim Democrats in the room, as well as some other Jewish members and third-party participants. Representative Rashida Tlaib, Palestinian-American, who is critical of the Israeli government treatment of Palestinians, grew emotional and started to cry as she spoke of her grandmother's suffering in the West Bank at the hands of Israelis. "She would treat you like a grandson," she said to Phillips, according to two people in the room. Is this, the graphs I read, is that a fair representation of what took place in the room?
It is, Chad. In fact, what disappointed me is that that became public because it was a very distinctly private human effort to reconcile and learn from one another and make progress behind the scenes. But the account, yes, absolutely, is right on.
Do you believe that Ilhan Omar is an anti-Semite?
You know, Chad, I believe that her statements on Twitter certainly used anti-Semitic stereotypes and tropes and language. There's no question. And that's what I was trying to explain to my colleagues who listened intently when I expressed to them that they truly are tips of an arrow. And the reason for this great sensitivity is, as so many know, pre-war Germany was not dissimilar to the current United States of America, where the Jewish community had assimilated, had professional careers, were parts of the community, and felt safe and secure in their home country. And part of our gathering that night, and a gathering, by the way, that we will be continuing, was to express our own life experiences and those of our respective communities so that we each understood, you know, the lens through which we view policy. And the description was accurate, and Representative Omar, I think, now better understands why words really matter and why the Jewish community has such an instant and almost visceral reaction to that kind of language. And I recognize Islamophobia. You know, we saw what just happened in New Zealand. And
yep.
We saw what happened in the synagogue in Pittsburgh. We saw what happened in Parkland. You know, we have a crisis of hate right now, and it is not something that the U.S. Congress can legislate. It is not something that even a thoughtful president can fix. But it is something that every single person in every neighborhood in this entire country can do something about. If we would break bread with people who pray differently than we do, who look differently than we do, who think differently than we do, we would be a better country. And in my estimation, finally realize the values and principles that make us extraordinary.
Yeah, I want to be clear about this. I don't have a shred of doubt the hate that Ilhan Omar has faced year after year. I see examples of that in text. What took place in West Virginia a couple weeks ago, somehow about this, don't forget about 9/11, and here I am, and it's a picture of her. That is absolutely disgusting and should not be tolerated. But here's what I'd say, one more point on what the representative says. It seems like we get a comment or a tweet, and there's something from her or her supporters who say, well, I understand this better now. Now I have more information. And then 2 weeks later, there's another comment that plays up stereotypes and tropes, and she is a very intelligent person. And for me to look at this and say she had no idea what that meant to Jewish Americans, for me, Dean, just doesn't pass the common sense or intelligence test.
And I understand that, Chad, and as you well know, I took some heat for not expressing, making a public statement, expressing myself publicly after the first episode, and it took me some time because I wanted to visit with her face-to-face, which I did. She is now well aware of my feelings. She's certainly taken the time to meet with the Jewish community at large and I think around the country. She's well aware now of how that language hurts, why it's dangerous, and why it can't happen again. So I believe that she now understands. I'm hopeful that that will put an end to this. And most of all, I hope that we can show the rest of the country how, despite different life experiences, despite different feelings, despite different passions, that we can even disagree without being disagreeable, and most importantly, learn from one another and try to make Congress first and this whole country a better place. And that takes a commitment, and I'm certainly up to the task, and I trust that she is too.
About five more minutes with Congressman Phillips. We appreciate him coming on for this extended conversation. When you ran against Eric Paulson and when you won, you talked about, I'm not running as a Democrat, I'm not running as a Republican, I'm running as someone who will represent this district, represent the state, and I look forward to working in a bipartisan way. And you talked about even in this meeting where it was Democrats of trying to branch out. Are there examples early where you have been able to work with Republicans in a small way where you think that is showing in on bigger issues, even more complicated issues, more controversial issues, where each side will not get their way, but legislation will actually pass and you will be a part of it, as opposed to gets back to a purity test and it's basically just screaming at each other and nothing really gets done?
And the answer is absolutely. And it's only been 60 days, Chad, but I can tell you that one of the great joys so far has been investing in new relationships with my Republican colleagues, particularly around the table at the Problem Solvers Caucus, which I've spoken, I think, on air about before.
Yep.
It's a group of an equal number of Democrats and Republicans committed to doing good work on behalf of the entire country. And you ask about achievement. Within 2 weeks of being sworn in, a group of us were invited to the White House by President Trump during the shutdown. We sat at a table with him for an hour, and our Problem Solvers group made a proposition to the president that we thought would end the shutdown and find a thoughtful way through what was, to me, a devastating a tactic. And the good news is he listened, and 1 week later, he did exactly what we had asked, which is to sign a three-week CR, continuing resolution, that allowed conference committee to come up with a plan that he ultimately signed. So that was a good step in the right direction. And the only reason it happened is Democrats and Republicans sat at the table together with the president and listened to one another. I'll tell you a couple anecdotal stories in the last 2 weeks.
Before you get to the stories, can I just ask you about that meeting?
Sure.
We hear, especially from supporters of the president, that in some ways there's two Donald Trumps.
Mm-hmm.
There is the Donald Trump who you see when the camera's on. There is the Donald Trump when he's tweeting, but then there's also the Donald Trump when nothing is for the camera, nothing's for, you know, the reaction, and that he actually can get things done. That's when he is Donald Trump, art of the deal. Did you see that, or did that not quite live up to it?
Chad, I saw exactly that. I saw, and to some degree, the caricature that we too often, I think, see on Twitter and on television screens. But I also saw a much more reasonable side, a side that listened, a very hospitable side, and a complimentary side. And that is there is a truth to the fact that if Democrats and Republicans would sit at a table and respectfully navigate, negotiate, and listen to one another, a lot can get done. And frankly, the president made that very comment at that table that day, that, you know, that if this group could meet more regularly, we might find some paths forward. But the truth is, as you well know, and most people listening know, the two-party system is a problem.
Yep.
When one party offers a solution, no matter how reasonable or unreasonable it might be, the other party is prepared instantly to object. And that is to me, that's a dereliction of our responsibility. It's one that I'm trying to change. And to that end, I'll tell you a couple anecdotal stories. Just in the last week, I read that Mark Meadows, of all people, the head of the Freedom Caucus, he wants to eliminate super PACs, which is something that I think we should study. So I approached him on the House floor. We had a great talk. And lo and behold, we're going to get together and talk about that. Ted Cruz, Senator Cruz from Texas, he wants to talk about a term limit bill. So I approached him. We had a conversation not long ago. Who knows? We might be working together as well. A bill that I just signed on to that I think is the most important foundational underpinning of migrating from fossil fuels to green energy is a carbon fee and dividend bill that was authored by Ted Deutsch that has Republican roots. And there's a lot of that work, actually, that is going on behind the scenes. The sad truth is that the two parties, the leaders, often become the bottlenecks to actually getting those bills and good ideas brought to the House floor and then the Senate floor and voted on. So I'm part of a big group of people on both sides that are recognizing what's wrong and have great intentions to try to fix it and do better.
I always appreciate it, sir. Let's talk again soon. Thanks for coming on.
And a happy birthday to your dad.
I appreciate that.
I'd be remiss if I didn't share that.
Absolutely. I will pass along your best wishes. Thanks, Congressman.
Have a great day.
Dean Phillips, it's 28 past 1 on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.